I saw a lot of passion in these women wanting to design better products for women. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm a female engineer. Like, I should be doing this. This is a problem that I want to solve before I have to deal with it myself.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Health Technology Podcast. My name is Christine Minotto, and I'm the director of UCSF Rosamond Institute at the University of California, San Francisco. Today, we are talking to Santhi Analytis, founder and CTO of Moxley. Moxley makes Flow, a discreet, hands-free breast pump kit that has gained a lot of traction through viral marketing. Moxley was acquired by the parent company of Medela, a major breast pump maker that you may have heard of or use. Working mothers who breastfeed are all too familiar with the hassle of using the breast pump at work. Breast pumps can be awkward to use, and you have to find some privacy, which is not always easy. And all of that takes time that you don't have. So, Moxley is solving these problems. And stick with us today, and you learn a lot about innovation and branding for a consumer product. I hope you enjoy the talk. And if you like what you hear today, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
Welcome, Santhi. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's when we met almost over a year ago, maybe, a while back ago. And I remember you mentioning about you co-founded Moxley. And I thought that was a really interesting product. And you guys were acquired by Medela. And what's the history? How did you start it and why that company?
We started in 2014, the end of 2014. My background is biomedical engineering undergrad, and then at Stanford, I did my master's and PhD in mechanical engineering. I worked in a robotics lab, but my thesis was mostly around medical devices. I made a MRI-compatible devices to do interventions inside the scanner.
Because you did work for Sadra and Hansen.
Yes. Yeah. I worked at Sadra before that, between undergrad and grad school.
Okay.
And as an R&D engineer. So I had biomedical engineering uses and talent skills and interests to work there. But I knew that I wanted to go to graduate school. I just didn't know in what. So that, like, in between time was good for me to figure it out and decide what I was interested in. And at that time, it was surgical robotics. And since then, I've gotten more into imaging. While during my PhD, I invented a few devices and had some patents through Stanford's OTL office. And when I was finishing, I was actually thinking about starting a company around a force sensing needle that I had made and applying it to epidurals and placing needles properly for spinal taps.
Okay.
Things like that. So I was like in the middle of thinking about business plans and starting to talk to angels and things like that. At the same time, one of my co-founders, Gabrielle Guthrie, came from the product design program at Stanford. Mm-hmm. And we kind of knew of each other. We had some mutual friends, but I didn't actually know what she was working on until we ended up at a hackathon together for SF Maker Weekend that summer before we were both graduating. And she held up a breast pump that was like state of the art at the time. It was more portable. It's this pale yellow color. And she said, it's something between a baby toy and a medical device, and we could do better.
Okay.
And a group of seven of us came together for that weekend, the hackathon.
You do not know anybody except for Gabriel.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we worked on a concept and a little bit of prototyping too. Around a smaller, quieter, kind of more wearable pump. And one judge's favorite that it was held at PCH. And
this is over one day.
This was over a weekend. This is over a weekend. And so we stayed in touch after that. And then we got more involved in new of Highway One, which was a hardware incubator run by PCH at the time. And and Gabrielle just kind of like kept in touch with me and kept in touch with her over the summer. And meanwhile, she met our third co-founder, Kara Delzer, who came from also GSB. She did her MBA at Stanford Business School. But they didn't know each other at first either. Sort of mutual friend introduction. But Kara, like, just had a baby and went back to work at eBay. Got sick and tired of, like, having to seclude herself from... I get isolated every, like, couple hours to go pump, and then...
They don't provide her with a really nice room.
I'm sure there was a nice room, but even then, it's like, you know, you go from, like, leading a team and feeling confident and doing your work, and then you have to, like, step away. And she just got sick and tired of that and wanted to innovate in the space. And her and Gabrielle met first, and then, like, okay, well, we got the, like, design and business. We need more technical expertise. We need an engineer. So they approached me. And, for me, it was, like, the timing for all of us was just perfect. But I saw a lot of passion in these women wanting to design better products for women. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm a female engineer. Like, I should be doing this. This is a problem that I want to solve before I have to deal with it myself. decided to join in and share in that vision of better products for women.
Yeah, maybe for our listeners, if you can just tell us about Moxley product.
Yeah, so we founded with the idea of improving the breast pump experience. And so our first product is a breast pumping system, which is discreet and low profile. It basically, I don't know how much you know about breast pumping, but the current...
I've done it.
Yeah, because you know it. Okay. I guess for others out there, honestly, I didn't know what a breast pump looked like until this hackathon. So it was like, you know, I'm done with my PhD and this is the first time I've seen it.
You don't need to know unless you need it.
Yeah, you don't need... That's the thing. Nobody knows until they use it or their partner uses it or their sister uses it. And then it's just like, oh, what is that? Okay, so there are these plastic funnels and bottles and things that have to hang off of your body. You need to hold them up to your breast, another hand for the pump. But if you want to be hands-free, then you put on this special bustier with holes on it and you kind of have to like hunch over and let the milk flow through. Our product replaces the things that you wear, the funnels and the bottles. Mm-hmm. And it's much more lower profile. It's discreet. There's a flexible neck component to conform to different body shapes. Mm-hmm. And there's only like three main pieces that snap together. They're big. They're easy to clean, unlike all the little pieces and a lot of other breast pump accessories. That's our first product that's currently out there, and it's compatible with insurance-provided double electric motors, breast pump motors. Because after the Affordable Care Act, all women can get a breast pump for free and do. So this is sort of, it's like an upgrade to the pump that you're already getting to have that discreet experience and being able to have the confidence and pump on the go. You can use whatever bra you're already wearing. You don't have to take your shirt off. It slips right under. So if you have your nursing bra or anything else, whatever you already have, really.
Do the women have to go to a separate room? Because the pump, I don't know how big these pumps are.
Because the pump is dependent on what you get from insurance. So we're popular with the most, we're compatible with the most popular pumps. So they can be kind of like the size of a small, you know, couple bricks on your desktop or even like a Walkman size. Like there's different pumps out there. But we found that like the pump size and the noise isn't the biggest problem as long as most of these pumps already have like battery packs. So they're chargeable and they're somewhat portable or you have a car charger and things like that. What people really wanted was that, the discretion and to get rid of all these parts and thing like the hassle of taking your shirt off, putting on a special bra, and like, you know, just the chance that someone could walk in on you if you have,
yeah,
if you're in a conference room or you're even your closed door office, you know, there's still that, even in a lactation room, there's still the like sometimes fear of someone coming by, seeing all of this in front of you. We know that a lot of women will like pump in the car on the way to work or things like that. Like, you know, you can sit in your car and still pump. You can sit in the lobby of a hotel room, or if you're at a conference, you can't find a
right
discreet room, at least you can find a quiet place even. And even if you want to still keep using the mother's room at your, you know, employer's office, it's just a little bit more, I guess, of a warmer, like, you don't take your shirt off, warmer, dignified experience. Yeah, and it's easier and faster because of the number of parts and just the, ease of use.
Yeah, no, I'm just remember when I have a 12-year-old son, so when I was fortunate to have, you know, the lactation room. But I remember the lactation consultant was saying about, you know, you do need to have a quiet place and relaxing atmosphere to be able to express your milk. And exactly. How do you compensate that if you tell these women that they can express milk everywhere? But
that's a great point. And I think that is one thing that I always knew, because I mean, we've been talking to women from day one, and we know about the, like, the, just the emotional like toll around choosing to breastfeed. That's one reason too, why, you know, for our like smart product, which I didn't talk that much about yet, but, you know, people are interested in volume of milk and just kind of knowing, okay, how much am I pumping? Am I pumping enough? But they don't want to know like what they can't control.
Yeah.
For example, like nutritional information or fat content. Like if you don't have any control over it and you can't change it, then it's just another stress, just like, you know, being in a calm place to have let down. Mm-hmm. I think that is very valid. Like, oh yes, if you can pump in front of people, does that mean you really want to? You know, at first when I started Moxley, I was like, oh, wouldn't that be cool if someday it was just normal to, like, you know, pump, be in a meeting and like lead a meeting and still pump and like, no, like it's no big deal. And maybe someday it will be. But I think actually living through it made me also feel like I'm comfortable pumping at my desk. I will pump in meetings, maybe founder meetings or with just, you know, maybe one or two other female colleagues. But it's not like right now, it's not like I would go and lead a meeting and pumping. But if you have a little bit more of an open plan office or, you know, especially on the go while traveling, and then this, like, it's more like a tool to help it make it easier. Because if you have to pump anyway while you're at work, like, it's better than having to take everything off. And yeah, and I think it is one thing that every woman is different in, like, how comfortable they need to be and how relaxed in order to get the letdown. But it is definitely important. And, you know, every mom who breastfeeds knows the, like, how your milk supply goes up and down with your stress level.
Right.
But I think it's the nature of, you know, if you have to work and be away from your baby and but want to still provide breast milk, then we just want to make it easier.
The competitor, I don't know if Willow is your competitor, but that it seems like they're trying to make it so that you can pump during the meeting, at least based on the ad that I saw.
Yeah.
And when I look at that, is it really possible or not? I don't know.
Yeah. And I think maybe psychologically, someday, maybe someday in the future, it'll be totally normal and that would be great. And I think it's good that there are other breast pump companies out there and that women have choices. Willow is a very expensive pump. Like, I think that is the biggest differentiator is, yes, it's all included and the whole system goes under your clothes, but it's also not in the budget of a lot of American families to afford a.
How much is Moxley
Accessories are $79.99.
And that is covered also by the insurance?
It's right now just covered by, like, you can use flexible spending accounts and HSAs for it. We'll go into insurance. We'll be available through, like, DMEs.
Mm.
Soon. But especially when we have our own, like, full pump system, then I think insurance is the way to go. But a lot of accessories kind of start in this. Flexible spending and DME route. But we are right now selling off of moxley.com. And the biggest thing that, going back to how we're, like, differentiated, is most, like, women, like I said, can get a pump already for free. Mm-hmm. So
you just need to buy the accessories.
Yeah, and this upgrade still gives you the, like, mobility, the hands-free, and the discretion without needing an expensive pump. And our bottles are reusable, too. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think the Willow, you need to keep getting bags, and those are extra costs.
Okay.
If for the people who can afford it or who have very big employers that are getting them the pumps, like, that's great if it works. But
this podcast is sponsored by IO Life Science, a Silicon Valley-based medtech design and development consultancy, transforming your technologies into a unique healthcare solution. For more information, visit their website at iolifescience.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Brown Ratnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that helps life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownratnick.com.
So you guys were acquired by Medela. Mm-hmm. And so how does that work? You still have all your brand with Moxley. I mean, the website is all Moxley, not...
Yeah.
Medela. How does that work?
That's a good question. When we first started negotiations and when they were interested in taking us, so we're owned by the parent company of Medela. So we're sisters with Medela and sisters with Bravado, which is a pump bra, nursing bra company. Back from the very beginning, they always... they wanted to let us run with our brand and our idea and, like, release this product on our own, a little bit like, I guess it was a little bit more experimental, right? Like, this is an accessory that is very different from any of the Medela offerings. Mm-hmm. In its form factor, but also it's, like, its purpose to fit most moms. Mm-hmm. And to be pumping under the clothes. So from the very beginning, it was a little bit more like, okay, Moxley, like, do what you're doing and get it out there and see what the market likes and wants.
Okay.
And then we'll, like, decide how to integrate it into our product line or use Medela to sell. So I think it was intentionally kept separate to kind of separate the brands and what people expect from a startup, I think, is also very different from, like, the industry leader for, like, all the right reasons. And I think it makes sense. Like, we're still a very small, like, nimble team out here in San Francisco. So we still have our story. It's just that, you know, our funding comes from the same parent.
So how much support do you get from them in terms of infrastructure?
Oh, that's a great question. So, from the beginning, we, engineering-wise, like, we had some support. Like, if we have technical questions or ideas, for example, for product specifications, if we say, okay, we have a similar kind of connector like you guys do, and this is the way that we were thinking to test it for reliability, what do you do? That, like, sort of verification information. That's like engineering side. Marketing, we're right now actually trying to integrate more and hoping to leverage some co-branding campaigns and some of the distribution that, like, Medela already has.
That makes sense.
And it's still early, right? The Flow has been on the market now for just about 3 months.
Okay.
So, yeah, but the, this is the next step.
How do you sell it now? Online?
Online, on our website.
Okay.
Yeah. And soon it'll be Amazon. And then we're working on the partnerships and with Fudila and other retailers of expanding.
It's kind of so. Nice that you have the large company marketing budget. Hopefully.
Yeah, to an extent. To an extent. Like, we're still, yeah, the marketing is very much, like, viral, which actually for, you know, moms, it's not that hard. Like, we're much more, you know, a consumer product right now than, of course, we had the regulatory and all of that, mm-hmm. but we're not marketing ourselves like a medical device. And we know how to talk to millennial moms. Yeah. And so... I think,
how do you talk to millennial moms?
Well, so we do have like ads on Instagram, for example, some Facebook, but a lot of things are just like there are influencers. There are like certain moms that review products and have a lot of followers. And mm-hmm. there are those followers or moms that are like, okay, looking for the best products. Like what does like the moms I know that are leading these groups look for? And mom networks are just like they spread like wildfire. Yeah. Like I know every mom I know probably is in at least four different groups, mom groups, either through their hospital or work or mm-hmm. just like online. So it's I think it's easier to spread the word once you have like a few dedicated like followers mm-hmm. to then.
Okay.
And tell others. And that's what we've been seeing. Yeah, there's been mom, influencer moms that like will take photos of themselves. They're like in their car. Like I was, my colleague was just outside, didn't even know it was pumping, you know, and, of themselves and they share it or, show how discreet it is and that they can go shopping and things like that. And we've had moms also like make their own unboxing videos and like how to use Moxie with this other pump. Like they'll just do their own like content.
And you just linked it
and we can link it and it spreads. And like a lot of this can happen for like little or no cost just because people love the product. And I think that's.
But how does it work? Because like mom, you know, breastfeeding mother is short term, right?
Yeah.
So you're influencer for many different products and they're influencer for a certain period of time.
Yeah.
So you have to keep looking on to find a new influencer.
I think that's true. So yeah, for to an extent. But a lot of moms also have either multiple children mm-hmm. or like toddlers, so they might have a baby even if the oldest, you know, is like 4 or 5, right. Things like that. But I think that is true, but at the same time, there is always new babies being born and a new, like, you know, new set of customers mm-hmm. too. So, yeah, I think it is just also part of the cycle.
So do you have like a social media person or do you leverage what the parent company have?
No, we have our own head of marketing and, social media content and creators.
Have you seen your product getting traction outside United States in terms of is, you know, breastfeeding in the U.S. is pretty big now, but I don't know how is it like in Asia or in Europe?
Yeah. Well, we definitely have in like, you know, outside interest right now. We're cleared in the U.S. so we can only like actually sell products in the U.S. But yeah, next we are looking at China and in Europe because those are big markets, and especially China's got a big working, you know, working moms population mm-hmm. That also value U.S.-based brands mm-hmm. and products. So I think there's a big opportunity there.
Yeah. I'll digress a little bit. You work in Sadra and in Hanson, so it's kind of different kind of as device, not consumer devices.
Yeah.
Now working at Moxley. I mean, what do you learn from that experience that you apply here? And what are the things that you felt that is kind of nice that you don't have to worry about when you're working for a company like Sadra or Hanson?
Oh, that's a good question. I think so at Sadra and Hanson, I think they're both opportunities for me to hone my engineering skills and my like ability to write good test protocols and design things and, you know, analyze and bring identify problems and solve them and think like all of that, which also I think carried through my PhD. And while at Moxley, there's still a lot of that in the back end, you know, especially for making sure a product meets all like the regulatory standards that it needs. Like we have to still write good product specs and know how to test them and show evidence. And, you know, we make a lot of equipment to to test the devices. So there's still a lot of, I guess, like systems engineering that goes in the background. And when we started Moxley, I guess I didn't talk that much about this before, but we were going after a, you know, a fully smart system. And so, again, I guess there's still that the engineering that I've experience I had from integrating mechanical and electrical and software all into one. But the things that I think that I loved about Moxley that is very different is we're much more connected to the end user. Like I said, we've talked to moms all the time. And even from the beginning, it was it's always like bringing prototypes or like getting feedback and just watching and observing how like what moms do while they're pumping at work or at home. And then like right now seeing it out in the field and getting a lot of, I guess, love back from the users has been like, it's very fulfilling and motivating. And I think that is a lot harder to get when you're working on like a part of a medical robot or a device that, really only the clinician is the user and that person who benefits, like the patient you don't really interact with. So I think that's great. I think our our like the fact that we can have a more consumer focused brand is also very interesting, and we can grow and market in with that tone. I think also is it's like it's fun. It's all kind of new to me personally, but I think there's a lot to gain with this, like different. I guess a different perspective, a different way to market than a traditional medical device, and
Does it also like because when I think about a consumer product, they you always need to show the new shiny things much faster. And that would also increase your churning with new product.
That's very true. I think that that's so true. We are, trying to also get better and release more things quicker. And just thinking like when we launched like 3 months ago and then very quickly had a new set of adapters available to be compatible with a new set of pumps. And that sort of thing is also more, very motivating to have a website now and a store online that we can add products to and then people will be excited by them.
But also finding the right balance on, because sometimes you get feedback from the customer and you feel like you can come up with a new product, but then you're constantly doing that. It's also driving the cost of your operating expenses and then finding like what's the right balance, what to follow through and what's something that is nice to have versus need to have.
And right now, I think we're small and nimble enough that I think one thing that does happen, for example, is like closing the customer service loop. I think we've had a lot of like great reviews because of our customer service. They get on a problem and then they can come back and ask the engineers like, okay, so this is happening. Like, what do you think it could be? And we can offer a solution. And it's just a very quick feedback loop. And then we have, happy customers who can then spread the word. But I guess related to like a website, a more recent example, we Herminio was just saying how he liked the videos on our website. And like one of the first videos right now that's up is a comparison of, well, one, how do you put the Moxley device under your shirt and how does it, how is it used? We got a lot of feedback when we first launched that the initial like images and videos were a little bit confusing because we got just from social media some of our ads the response was like, well, where, how does it work, like where does it go, where's the
how's it different from what
things like that. And then we realized like, okay, we need more we need clearer assets to show and educate people. And so very quick turnaround, our design team was able to come up with better like videos and content and short clips to show how it goes together in like an educating but also fun way.
And quick too, because nobody have the time to watch more than 30 seconds.
So just to get to the point, but like get to the right point. And we also show comparisons too on our website of, okay, what does it look like with the Moxley and other supposedly discrete systems? And that's helpful too to people right away to know, like, okay, well, what bra does this work the best and easiest? And once those assets were up and we turned on ads again, like the sales went up.
That must be very rewarding.
This podcast is sponsored by IO Life Science, a Silicon Valley-based medtech design and development consultancy, transforming your technologies into a unique healthcare solution. For more information, visit their website at iolifescience.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Brown Ratnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that helps life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownratnick.com.
So going back when you first started, you know, you have three women starting this women's product, which is great. What challenges that you face when, you know, three young women starting a company in the women's health space?
That's a great question. So challenges that we faced as women, right in the beginning, I think we might have wasted some time with certain investors until we got smarter about, okay, like targeting the right type of people who are either interested in diverse founding teams or companies working on problems for women. And I think that, that was probably helpful. Like,
what was the aha moment that's like, oh, we should change direction rather than keep doing the same thing?
Well, in terms of the funding, I guess, aspect and raising money, I think we've learned after a couple, like, I guess, demo pitches that that wasn't really working for us because usually the audience was too broad or like, the potential industries were so varied that we started to focus more on the types of people who would were interested in the problem itself. So I think that was helpful. I'm just thinking, like, while we were three young women, in terms of like facing difficult or even like maybe sexist comments and things like that. Like it
did
happened.
It happen?
I mean, sometimes things are just sort of, you know, not like more benign. Like, you know, they would look at us and even though I could say, oh, I built this prototype, we'd get questions of like, but who's building it for you? Or who's designing it for you? Things like that, you know, which you just sort of kind of dismiss. And it's like, okay, like they don't know each other. They don't know better. Or, we learned too when we start pitches or talk to certain types of people, especially if they didn't know where we were coming from, that it was better to lead with, you know, and I have a PhD in mechanical engineering, or and I have a master's from product designer, like, you know, and I am a MBA from, you know, just things like that to kind of, even though we might think like, okay, I thought it was obvious, or like, you're meeting with us for a reason, it's just sort of to lay it out there to say,
put the credibility out there.
And I think that was, you know, helpful.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. It's interesting because sometimes because you have it, sometimes you don't think of it as a big deal.
Yeah. But then, yeah, and then I mean, nobody likes a walking resume either. So yeah. You have to like tread this line. But sometimes it is important to, depending on who you're talking to and what you want out of them, to put it out there. Yeah. And I'm thinking about like maybe inappropriate things that we had heard was, I think. I don't know if I should share this story.
Oh, that's
actually,
okay. Yeah, yeah. But it's interesting. I mean, somebody was asking me, a reporter was asking me this question. I was like, I don't know because it didn't happen to me.
Yeah.
So, but then I said, I only hear stories that it happened to women, but I, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I could say a very high level, like, and we can decide later if this is something we want to keep or not. But it was at a meeting. And this potential investor said, as he's talking, just kind of casually, "Oh, and you know, because we're talking about breast pumps, I can't help but look at your chest." And this is in front of, you know, all three of us female co-founders, and it just like kind of kept going, and the whole meeting just went by. And then I think it was only afterwards. It's like, wait, what did he like really say
that? Yeah.
Anyway, so those are the types of people that you realize not to
that you don't want to work
again,
with them.
You wouldn't want to work with anyway.
So the nice thing there's a few women investors that they might be able to, they might be interested in this product early on, probably.
Yeah, and we did have some as well. Like we had hashtag Angels group and 79 Studios and Grit Labs. So one thing that I did learn, though, early on, we did as a team that, you know, we went a lot faster once we brought others in. And I know we were capable, we liked to build things, but we actually, like, realized that once we had our vision, we could hire some contractors to help us with the hard things and the things we didn't know. Because I think realizing, like, okay, we don't have to know everything ourselves. We don't have to be the experts. And, you know, we don't have to go out and learn app design when we can, like, hire people to do the coding for us.
Right. And how do you do that before you have your money?
So I guess early on, I guess before we had enough money to hire developers, but we had some like small friends and family. And we also had some money from Highway One, basically from the beginning. So we had a place to work with a machine shop. Mm. We could make prototypes and do 3D printing. But I just remember one of our first focus groups as a company, we had, instead of a real app, we had cut out like iPhone frames and foam core and
describing
images,
the concept.
Yeah, images of different screens of like, okay, what do you think this is going on here? Like, what is the data you would like to see? Things like that, which actually, you know, it's good. It's something physical still and it's a conversation starter, but, you know, and you should figure out what people want anyway before you make your specifications for your app and to like pay developers to code it up. So, there are like cheaper ways like that, for example, to get feedback and go and meet people and talk to your potential like users and really find out what they want. And from the very beginning, we had so many handmade, like, you know, silicone hand cast prototypes and 3D printed parts that we could put together and just like put in front of people and say, okay, how easy is this to assemble? Like we could do usability testing pretty early on and refine the design. And there's been, you know, evolutions of designs for the current Moxley product. Those are like things that get feedback and show that people are interested and then still help with the story and the fundraising until we can get enough money to then make it real and hire developers or like extra contracting help to make the product.
Yeah. So how many people in the company now?
right now we're about 10 full-time. We've got a handful of interns, and then there are still contractors we work with for like regulatory and mm-hmm. for some other engineering design-related things.
Yeah, that's growing by 3 times.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's So you're based here in San Francisco?
Yes, we're based in San Francisco. Yeah.
And you had a baby. You're a user now. Is there something that you learn when you use it? Like, oh, I should have designed it differently.
Yeah. There were some things that I was like, I would do it differently. And then there are other things that was like, oh, this is like great. Like this feature is better than I thought it would be. And right now, like with the, like, for example, the current Moxley flow, and I say current Moxley flow because we did have a couple redesigns.
But as a customer, does the customer know that there's redesigning going on when you buy different versions?
Oh, no. There's the one that, you mm-hmm. know, is FDA cleared and is being manufactured mm-hmm. and is that we're selling. in terms of being a mom myself and using the product, like, when it's in this real form too, it's very, very different than like the 3D prints and hand cast uh-huh. things from before. But I'm just like, I loved how clear our flange is, and like you can see your nipples and you can rearrange if mm-hmm. you have to, and just like a quick peek. And whereas you can't really do that with the Willow or a lot of in-bra mm-hmm. Systems because there's just a lot of material or it's opaque completely. But as any pumping mom knows, that you, like, things might shift around or you need to like peek in and make uh-huh. sure things still aligned. So like that's very easy. We have a valve that pops onto our bottle and it makes the whole system more spill resistant.
Okay.
So there have been a couple of times where I have a bottle full of milk that I just took off and put on my desk, the valve's still on there, and just like slightly knock it over, and I didn't miss any milk. Like,
that's definitely very precious.
Yeah, the liquid gold did not spill, so that saved me a couple times. And, like, we always knew our valve was special, and people loved the fact that, oh, okay, it stays on the bottle. It's harder to like lose the size of it and everything. That saved me a couple times. Just even like our tubing. The way that it connects and it's flexible and rotates around, like it's a lot harder to like kink the tubing or anything mm-hmm. underneath your clothes. Anyway, so those are like things I love. There's definitely some things that would change. Like I would have wished that we made more sizes from the beginning. Maybe gone, like we could have gone after the pump earlier.
Right.
Our original like plan is the accessories first and then to make it smart uh-huh. because that way we can work with, what everyone else has, which I think is still a good win because, you know, making the pump takes longer. So at least we can have something that, that we can solve the big problems because mm-hmm. I think we still followed the right, like, trajectory of our product roadmap because it's the stuff you wear that annoys people the most. But I think we're just excited to build the next thing and put it all together. So in terms of what I mentioned, like, the redesigns, there have been, I guess, some learnings along the way. Mm-hmm. The first year we went after our full vision of a smart accessory. Still works with your insurance provided pump, but it was low profile and it had sensors and we had an app. But it didn't work the way that we thought it would. Things worked well on prototype form or on the benchtop with the sensors, but then out in the real world, you have a lot of different factors going on that we did not optimize for. So it was an extensive learning in that we tooled up and things and made plastic parts and mm-hmm. then had some quality issues and stepped back and was like, okay, wait, like what's most important? What we need to focus on and solve? Mm-hmm. And we honed in on the accessory. Uh-huh. There's like a lot of learnings there mm-hmm. now.
Do you change your approach now based on that experience?
Yeah, for sure. Like trying to prototype closer to the production materials faster without actually spending the money on like production tools. Mm-hmm. There are still cheaper prototyping engineering tools that you can use to get injection molded parts. Right. But yeah, so I think there was something like a lot of learnings there. And we also, as a whole, just got a lot better with quality and better at specifying things and learning like, okay, well, this is important. If we want a manufacturer to pay attention, then mm-hmm. we need to call it out and we need to have a test for it and something on the line to show, okay, yeah. if it doesn't pass this tumble test or whatever it is, if it leaks at this stage, we can't move on. Yeah, so all of that was a lot of learnings. It made us more rigorous and knowledgeable to go faster the next time around.
Yeah, so. Sounds like you're having a lot of fun doing this.
Yeah.
It must be great to when you see the products on a market. Oh, I always like to end the conversation with our guests on books that they read.
Okay.
And it's kind of my selfish way of trying to get book recommendation.
Well, currently on my nightstand, the books I'm reading, one might be relevant, I guess, to this group and other two maybe not. But I've just read Changing Tides.
No, I have not heard that one.
Changing Tides by Jennifer LeBlanc. And it's like a curation of essays from mostly women, but also people who support women investors and entrepreneurs. And it's a lot of like life lessons, basically, in a nice,
So like a short story.
Essay format. Yeah. Some stories, some like practical advice for if you are a female founder and you're thinking of doing this.
Do A, B, C.
Yeah, these are some things to think about.
Okay.
And
what are the three things that you draw from that book?
One was as an entrepreneur, like lessons to not burn out too, like how to step back and like realize that you need to take care of yourself to take care of your company. Mm-hmm. There was an essay within that about, you know, going solo and how difficult it can be to be a solo female founder. I am glad that I have co-founders, and I think that's one thing that I don't think I would want to go that deep, that solo route, and for all the reasons. But I think that was one thing that was a little bit eye-opening. Like, oh yeah, it made me realize like we were really lucky to mm-hmm. find each other and have like very strong different skill sets mm-hmm. that complemented each other well. So like founding team is important. What else did I learn from this? There's actually in general, there's a good list within the different essays of why I would recommend reading it, of organizations and groups that are interested in funding diverse teams. Mm. So it's a nice resource.
They list the organization
Organizations, and some are like within med tech as well. And investors that are trying to make a difference.
Okay.
And change the tide. That's where the title comes from.
Okay. That's great. I should look it up. Well, thank you so much. It's been fun.